Welcome back to another episode of Not Your Father's Stocks. Today, Tyler and I are going to, or at least going to start off. We always kind of trend off topic a little bit, but we'll at least start out talking a little bit about risk reward. And I'll start out a little bit on my end, some of the companies that I look at, and then Tyler can probably has differing opinions and just different thought process towards it. But I think one thing about risk reward is that it can be, in a sense, dependent upon the type of play that you're looking at. Like, for example, a lot of the companies that I track and I follow, I'm anticipating earnings growth, cash flow growth, et cetera. So one of the ways that I kind of measure my downside risk in these type of companies is I love building the models because it takes like my assumptions that are implicit. If even though I know, like, when I'm building them, they're not going to be like, when I'm trying to forecast something 2 years away, I know it's not going to be accurate. I know there's going to be something off about it, but it just forces me to make assumptions that are implicit, explicit. And it just really helps me see the drivers. One that we talked about was Jack recently in our Discord chat. And just like how I saw how variable it was with a 1% change in gross margin stuff kind of helps me see like what the main drivers are. If they can take their gross margin up 1%, how much more money drops to the bottom line, et cetera. But for my kind of risk reward for these types of companies, so I build my models and I build my best case, my base case, my worst case scenarios. And going off of that, I have like, say the company guides for 20% revenue growth in 2021, and then 2022, they didn't provide guidance yet, but it's kind of going off of where you kind of see their competitive advantages, how far you think this company can scale, industry news, kind of just building your view upon the company and building, kind of placing yourself in the seat of the CEO and seeing where you think this company can be taken to. So let's say they guide for 20% revenue growth, and I'm just saying I'm going 2 years out. Then my next, they guide for 20%, so my best case might be 22% revenue growth. And then the next year, maybe I have another 20% revenue growth year. Then my base case might be like, and somewhere from 18 to 20% revenue growth. And I really like place a lot of emphasis on my base case, 18 to 20%. And then the next year, 18%. And then my worst case, I'm going to make like a 14 to 15% growth rate, because I mean, there shouldn't be that extreme variability within the year that they're providing guidance, but there are hiccups that happen. Even just 1 year out, I don't think there's going to be a ton of variability, especially the businesses I look at, because there's a lot of recurring revenue streams that are pretty sticky. So it's not really lumpy revenue. And then in my worst case, I might have operating expenses actually increasing, to where in my best case, I might have revenue growth increasing and OPEX staying the same or maybe decreasing, because I'm expecting operating leverage to begin kicking in for whatever reason specific to that company. But so I kind of place a lot of heavy emphasis and probability on my base case. I look at my worst case, and the worst case doesn't necessarily assume like a fat tail event, like a COVID striking. I mean, no one was really able to predict COVID hitting a year before in their valuations, et cetera. So, you're constantly adapting and making changes on a weekly, monthly, whenever new information is presented to you. But let's say my base case valuation is $10 per share, and my worst case valuation is $5 per share, and the company's trading at $7 per share. I kind of look at $5 being my downside, and that doesn't mean that $5 is your max downside by any means. It just means that you know how much you're going to allocate when that stock is trading at $7. But if it gets down to your worst case and there's new information available, the business is still performing normal, there weren't any fundamental changes, the price just changed, and it gets down towards that $5 per share, you know that's when you're going to be allocating harder to the position. So it's just knowing where you are within that risk reward profile of your base case being a valuation of $10 per share, the stock's trading, say, at seven, your worst case is at five. Are you going to allocate harder at $7 per share, or are you going to allocate harder at $5 per share? And I mean, generally, we're looking at companies that have a lot more upside than $7 to $10 per share, but just keeping the numbers easy for the specific example. But that's kind of how I do it. And then I visualize this on the chart as well. So I go into, I don't want to necessarily call it technical analysis, but I draw a channel. It's like basically a long-term support, long-term resistance lines. And this gives me a visual of when I would like to add. So I line up where I think the stock should be moving over the course of a couple of years. And it creates a visual. So then I know when it's at the bottom of my risk reward towards that support. And it doesn't mean it can't break that. It can obviously break that, but then you're probably getting a better opportunity or else something went fundamentally wrong with the company. But I'm just collecting towards those low ends of the range. And then as it approaches my high end of the range, which is the high end of my valuation range, I know to take a little bit off the table and then keep repeating. And this is a process that worked, has recently worked really well in our David's T position too. But that's what I have to start, Tyler. So I'll pass it over to you.
Yeah. So one, the reason I love investing so much is purely because it is a risk to reward game. I kind of like a lot of things that you do and the things that you kind of mentioned. But what my view of business and how it applies to, you know, investing in the risk, the game of risk reward, you know, every decision that we make is a risk to reward decision. And I kind of, you know, just yesterday on the Instagram, I kind of went through, you know, what did my, you know, risk strategy look like for purchasing the journals, right? And, you know, based on that risk reward, you know, and this is the thing that a lot of people miss is like, the total value of your bankroll determines a lot of what you can and cannot do. And, you know, when I look at any business, I value it like a complete dummy, right? I want to find out what are the assets minus the liabilities. And I go, okay, you know, any moron will say that this business is worth this price. And, you know, it'd be really hard to argue against, you know, anything cheaper. And, you know, cause if my idea is, you know, you can't argue with what you can, all of the assets, if you sell them all off and you pay off all those liabilities, whatever's left over, that's literally how much I'm going to be getting. And, you know, that is the worst case scenario in my book. And what kind of goes on after is really important, where, yes, I want to see earnings. I only want to be buying companies that I, you know, am comfortable holding. And when we're talking about Jack, right? Like I look at that business and I'm like, you know, biased because I see the large sales number and I see the low market cap and I'm like, ooh, gooey, this could be huge. You know, this could trade at $30 a share and I'm buying it for five. Like, yeah, of course I like that risk to reward opportunity because even if I'm dead wrong, I only lose $5 a share. And if I'm, you know, right or partially right, you know, I get $5 a share, $10 a share, $15 a share, you know, whenever I decide to sell. But, you know, that was one that if I go back and I take out my sheet, it's like, do I like the product? Eh. You know, do I like the management team? Eh. And this is, you know, I don't really care about anything other than making money. And, you know, as my portfolio has grown a little bit and, you know, how I manage $5,000 is definitely a lot different than how I, you know, manage, you know, $100,000. So what I'm doing now is, you know, practicing being disciplined. And I only want to allocate money to something that I can actually pour money into with confidence. So even though I find a decent bet out there, that doesn't mean I just want to like, you know, go and buy it because, you know, stub toes happen and uncertainty is very real. Like you had mentioned COVID and, you know, I love the idea of uncertainty. And, you know, my favorite person is Claude Shannon. In terms of thinking about uncertainty, and he's,
I don't think I know this magnificent.
You don't know who that is?
I don't think. Yeah, so. Maybe I've come across, but.
And I just want to say this because Claude Shannon is probably one of the greatest thinkers of, you know, human history, and literally no one knows who he is. And what I'm fascinated by, and you know, I use the Kelly criterion for everything. This is the guy that invented the Kelly criterion.
Oh, okay.
So, but he didn't really apply. He didn't make it for investing. He made it for information theory. And you know, I want to say Claude was interesting because he came up with these boundaries as to what's possible. And that is so important. Like, for the Kelly criterion, it's not about, you know, you don't have to bet that much, right? And you probably shouldn't bet that much because you're probably not as accurate as you think you are, unless you're highly conservative. And humans are naturally, you know, not that good at forecasting future events. And if you really want to get into it, I don't know, if, you know, I know some like people that, there was a date back in like December 21st, 2011 or something where the world was supposed to end.
Yeah, I remember.
And people actually believe that this is going to happen. So it's like, you know, what were they thinking? Why did so many people believe this nonsense? Like, why, like, where's the proof? What's the, you know, logic behind the world ending? Yeah, and
that
stuff
was a
like
fun
that.
Time. Fun time to troll.
And it's like, so it's so silly. And it's like, you know, we see this and you see this in investing all the time. Like, people that actually think AMC is a $60 billion company, you know, you've got to be kidding me. What
is that the market cap?
What
is that the actual market cap?
No, it's you know, 30 billion, but people think it's going to 100, so that's 60 billion.
You know, I don't keep up with that stuff.
And you know, probably should.
24 billion.
It's absolute nonsense. But you know, it's like there's. When we put down, like, we're kind of the Kelly criterion is like the maximum that you should allocate to an idea. And, you know, overbetting is what I always say is like the number one investing sin. If you go on to Wall Street Bets, they have a losers tab where like people show their losses. Yeah. And it's like, okay, guys, if you want to learn investing, go study these people. What is a common theme? You know, between all of these losers, it's their overbetting. And, you know, Kelly or Claude Shannon really put that into perspective for me. I've always been a pretty big bettor when I was, you know, like Elfin, for example, like I bet 30% on that sucker. I bet like 35% on maybe even almost 40% on DRYS going down. There was like another one, GBSN. I was betting like 30%. And those were huge, huge trades for me. And, you know, it's so important to, you know, understand that investing is a reward to risk game. And, you know, your risk changes based on how much you're betting. And, you know, it's all, you always have to be mindful of your overall bankroll, not so much, you know, each individual trade has risk and each individual business has risk. That's why it's so important to actually understand businesses at the, you know, the most micro level. I think Trent Griffith does a really good job of that, where he like really understands. You do a really good job of that. You literally are the, you know, the best one out of all of us that literally gets down to the most micro, you know,
granular
aspect
stuff
of the business. And you know that stuff like better than anybody. Like you, my investing is so different where I literally don't even give a shit about, you know, the fine details.
Yeah, I like to do the scuttlebutt.
But it's different because of your style of investing versus my style of investing, because I'm literally relying on, you know, okay, well, it's already in the business. So I'm much more conservative and I don't need to be nearly as perfect. And even in my bet valuations, I'm pretty conservative. Like if I think something can double, you know, I hit those. I hit doubles and triples. Now, I don't know, like, you know, once I get outside of that, I don't really know, but sometimes you just let the market take care of that. Like when I did on Tandem is I was buying it at $3 a share and I go, yeah, this is worth like 9 to 12 easy, Ty, but you know, it could be worth 15. And you know, and you place that bet and next thing you know, it just takes off. And it's like my, you know, I told my friends about it. We're all like invested in it. This is before Augury, obviously. So it's like, at the time, it's like my group chat of three people. And like, I tell these guys, you know, they know that at the time, this is early 2018. They know I'm obsessed with stocks. They know that like, that's what I'm going to end up doing in life. And I used to joke around when we were in college, like, dude, yeah, I'm going to like own a hedge fund and like be making big bets. Like, I just love it. And you know, they're like always been, you know, as soon as we got out of college, everyone gets a job and everyone starts to have a little bit of money now, because we were all on scholarship. So we were really lucky. None of us had, you know, the debt that we had was minimal compared to like some of our other friends. But, you know, they're like, you know, okay, what should I be investing in? And I'm like, oh, I really like this Tandem stock. I'm like, I never tell anyone like what I like or not. I used to never go long, really. Like, my longs were Berkshire Hathaway and Markel Group. And finally I was like, okay, like I gotta start hitting my bets, you know, on my own. And I'm like, Tandem is like, I've been watching it for so long. Like, it's always been on my radar. I can't get rid of this thing. It's like always in the back of my mind. And as soon as that raise happened with Dexcom, I was like, all right, guys, like I like messaged them all and I'm like, now's the time. We're buying this at 3. You know, you're not allowed to buy it over 3. It's a one bet thing. And this is my risk management at the time, was you get one purchase order. This is before I started playing poker. You get one purchase order and you don't touch it after that. You literally don't touch it. You just let it ride. You don't care if it goes down. You don't care if it goes up until it hits, you know, your bet. Because I understood at that point how important the risk and the emotional risk of investing was, and how important the, you know, the actual dollar risk to reward aspect of investing is. And then like we all buy it and, you know, the rest was history. Thing takes off and they're like, you know, like gets to $12 a share and they're like, should we sell it? And I'm like, you know, like, let's just let it ride. And then holy Toledo, then it really starts to take off. I mean, it's, you're making 100% on your investment in a day. Like there are days it moved $3 a share and it's like, dude, oh my God, I just doubled money. And like,
that's what compounding, you know, is, right?
Oh my God. It's so beautiful. Like, and like, even today I like sit here and I'm like, the power of compounding is so important. Like, oh, like if you just focus on not going backwards, you literally are destined to win. And because you're going to find ideas that have upside. And it's like, every time I've been so patient in my investing. Like I don't even look at my portfolio basically ever. I really don't care what the prices of these stocks are. The only stock I care about is ImmuCell, because I'm trying to sell it at like 16-ish. I got my orders in. I don't even really, you know, play with them ever. But man, it's like, I want that Tandem opportunity where it's like, okay, this is so worth my time to dig deep in. Like when I did Tandem, I was like you, like I knew everything. Like I knew all about the data that they were collecting. I knew, you know, how these pumps were, you know, recycled through the business. So
build conviction.
One of the things that people didn't understand is that with the Tandem pumps, they get replaced after 3 years, at least the old ones were. So after 3 years, people got to buy more new pumps, and the insurance companies were covering this. I don't know if they are now. I haven't followed the business since I sold it, but you know, they had some pretty good growth to begin with. That's why, and you want to talk about compounding. It's like, they're already growing. And then for the first time in the company's history, they're going to have those reshipments pumps. And that's why, you know, and the one reason that it was so important to actually research the product, and I did a really good job of reaching out to all of the customers. Like I'm on YouTube messaging watching people, reviews, I'm on Facebook messaging people. Like, do you like this product? Yes, I love the product. That, as soon as I hear that, I go, okay, bam, add that to the sales growth. Like literally 10 out of 10 people were like, I love the product. And I was like, this is so important, you know, because all of these people are going to take their 3-year-old, you know, insulin pump, and they're going to renew it. And we're going to be making a ton of money. And I go, you know, I explain this to my friends. Yeah. If you actually look at reality, right? And you look at, okay, was I right in the way I was thinking? The revenue went from like 80 million to like 550 million. And it's like, yeah, I was definitely right. Like that was a good idea. But it took a lot of work. Like I probably worked on that for weeks, and I was, you know, just like sitting at my desk all day, researching about learning that everything about the business.
And the thing is you can do 100 hours of work and make a people's salary in a decade once your portfolio is scaled. That's the power of investing and the power of compounding all wrapped into one, is that you could do 100 hours, not even 100 hours. You could do 20 hours on something, when your portfolio is big enough, take a 10% position, have it 5X on you, and there's 3 or 4 years worth of salary all in one.
Yo, here's the thing. The way you think about it. I'm talking to my buddy the other day. He like texted me. He's like, yo, I want to get into, he's like, I got money in the bank. My friends are all telling me to buy this crypto trash. And I'm like, dude, he's honestly very intelligent. Like, he's by far one of my smartest friends. Like, you know, he played football up in Delaware, and he's like incredibly smart, like just logical smart. Like, he knows, he's just very intelligent. And we play poker, he always wins. He's that smart and he just gets it. And I'm like, yo, buddy, ignore, like, literally all of our friends are idiots. You're going to listen to them with what they're investing in? Like, these guys are morons, you know? Don't listen to them. Don't be an idiot like them. I was like, you know, I got a company that I think has significant upside. If you got money in the bank, you're better off. Why sit in cash when you can find something that offers, you know, a 7-to-1 bet for your money, or a 3-to-1 bet for your money, or 2-to-1 bet for your money? It's like the same thing. You know, I look at it like the same thing. I got cash sitting around. If I can find a 3-to-1 bet for that cash, yeah, I'm going to take it. You know, it's not doing anything anyways. And it's like, I don't care what the price does. The price is the offer. The price of the stock is determines the value in your bet. And, you know, people don't understand how easy investing is, to be honest. If you really boil it down, it's just a game of probability and value. And, you know, if you read like our research and you like just, you don't even gotta show up ever. You don't have to look at charts. You don't have to do anything, because all of our ideas are fundamentally based, right? We're actually understand these businesses, and we're saying, you know, how
many, and we talk about them every month. And we have a presentation where you can ask us questions every month.
Well, that's the thing. It's like,
talk about it.
You know, come pay us and we'll handle the load, because this to me is like, all I want to do is look at businesses and think about making money and betting and, you know, stuff like that. Like, I've been watching like the NBA playoffs, and like, you know, I'm looking at the odds, and I'm, you know, I've got a small, very small gambling account. And it's just like, it's fun. It's like, don't get me wrong, I love sports. I love, you know, there's a ton of lessons to be learned from sports. But dude, like, placing a $30 bet on a basketball game just doesn't get me going like placing a $12,000 bet on a business. Like, there's so much more, you know, fun in these businesses. And that's another thing about, you know, your portfolio. It's like, okay, when I first started, a position for me was like $1,000. And like, now I'm getting to the point where, you know, it's cool. It's like, if my $12,000 position triples, that's $36,000, right? That's like almost 50% of what some of my friends are making. You know, that's actually probably even more than 50% of what these guys are making. And I got three $12,000 bets sitting out there. If they all hit, you know, I'm making a lot more, you know, doing nothing. Just because I, you know, found these bets, don't get me wrong, it takes time to find them, and you have to look a lot. Like,
investing is really dry. You got to be willing to just like spend a week with a company and then say, well, on to the next one.
Yeah, it's like
you do a lot of that. It's a lot of that.
If you look at my like throwaway pile, it's just like filled with just looking at businesses and saying, looked at the one. There's one that I looked at yesterday. It's like $30 million. And they got the CEO is saying they got, you know, there's a chance that they're going to hit $100 million in revenue, significant growth compared to what they're doing. But it's like, I don't know if this guy's full of shit or like honest. And, you know, And it's hard to place, you know, that certainty on there. And that's why I personally have to rely on, like, you know, how many people do you know that are just absolutely full of shit? Like, when I was growing up, I was playing baseball. It was really all I cared about. And, you know, I didn't get recruited by anybody. I played Division I baseball. I literally got recruited by nobody. Like, a couple D2 schools, a couple, D1 schools for walk-on positions. And I had friends that are like, oh, yeah, I'm getting recruited by, like, 15 different schools. And, like, they throw names out there. And you're like, Duke, what? Like, Virginia, Duke, like, all these big schools. You're like, dude, what the? How is that possible? You know? And, you know, then they end up and they don't go anywhere. And, you know, it's like, fact of the matter was, is they were just full of shit. You know, the first person you lie to when you tell a lie is yourself. And some people just, you know, want to be full of shit. They just want to run their mouths. And that's kind of what, like, news media is. And that's what I've really been trying to, you know, come to terms with in my investing. It's like, I'm getting to the point where this is real money and I'm not messing around. Like, I'm not investing in some clown's business. And there's a lot of clowns out there. Like, I honestly believe that Elon Musk is a clown. Is he smart as hell? Yeah, but dude is a clown. He lacks a lot of qualities that I want to, you know, give to my money manager to, you know, he just, it's almost borderline irresponsible. Some of the things that he, like, I'd much rather give my money to Zuckerberg than Elon Musk. I, you know, if I could give it to anybody, it'd probably be, you know, Zuckerberg or Bezos. Like, I'm pretty sure Bezos was like an early investor in Google and like hit a home run on that. And, you know, like, he's a much better capital allocator than just inside Amazon. Like, the guy is a genius. But, you know, that's like, you know, the way you have to think about a business like Google or, you know, I actually learned this recently through Munger. And I mean, I see it all the time, but it's hard to trust things that you see that you're not necessarily confident in, because the world moves so quick that some people overestimate how it's going to work. And, you know, some people underestimate how it's going to work. And I don't want to be the guy that underestimates stuff, because there's a lot of potential out there. You know, I want to, you know, I go on the Amazon Live and I talk about the journal. Like, getting onto Amazon is important for businesses. So the journal's on Etsy, right? I literally just, like, didn't think of, like, I think Etsy is, like, naturally, I, you know, thought it was like jewelry and all kinds of stuff, not like books and journals. You go on there, literally hundreds of people are now seeing the journal. Like, that's just an awareness factor. Just having a shop out there, having a sign up, you know, hey, we're open. Well, you're not going to get any business if you're not open everywhere. And, you know, Amazon allows people to be open. And I love Amazon because you are able to get on there. And not only do you get a store, but you also now can have a live stream and be the salesperson inside your own store.
That's what, so awesome. I was going to bring up Verb again. I know you, when you looked into it before, but I watched their LD Micro presentation and they're integrating with Microsoft Outlook now too. And it seems like a no brainer that sales are going to be done that way. Like, not all sales, but they need like a 0.001% of sales, like, of online sales to have insane material revenue and growth in their company. But, All I did was watch the LD Micro presentation. I didn't read any transcripts. I didn't go into filings. I didn't look at any financials and stuff. But the CEO was super hyped up the whole presentation. He was hyped up. He brought good energy to the presentation. But they showed that data out of China. I think it was out of China as well. When you were researching it, did they share that data about all the sales through that China does in the same type of platform Verb offers?
No, I did not see that.
Yeah, you'll have to check. It's only a 25 minute presentation, and it's like midway through they show the China stuff, but it's pretty good. But other than that, back to the risk reward talk that we were having, Because I was talking about earnings growth and you were talking about balance sheet, margin of safety. And I've been working on putting together this presentation, like more of an education, I guess, into my process, and then just helping me build out my process even further as I try and jot it all down. But I have like, there's three types of investments for me, like a compounder, like something like SMSI, something that I would consider a compounder where it's revenue and earnings growth. And there's a turnaround, something like Summer and Jack, deleveraging and OPEX cuts. And then there's a pure value play, balance sheet, margin of safety. But when like I have then a Goldilocks investment is when you can either tie in all three of these or tie in two of these. And then when I think about tying in two of these, I think of Vertra, where we were able to buy after a raise at like $4.90 per share when the raise was at $6 per share. They had around $2.50 of cash on their balance sheet. And they're experiencing tailwinds that are obviously already shown up in their backlog materially by 42% growth. So you're looking at a balance sheet margin of safety where you don't have, you have like a, I guess like a 50% downside if a worst case ever scenario happened, but you know for sure through their backlog that they're going to experience revenue and earnings growth. So then you have both of those combined just increase your probability of achieving your upside reward and decrease the probability of achieving your downside risk. And I think that's one that you allocate harder to is when you have both of those combined.
Yes. one of the most important things that, and one of my favorite things to do is constantly look at how the value changes based on the price. And, you know, that's why I love the balance sheet margin of safety, because it doesn't move and it's very tangible. Like you can, you know, it's really easy for me to say, no, this is the risk. And where the price moves in relation to that risk. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some investments where, you know, you can use risk of complete loss of capital and still find a lot of value in these bets, right? So like that's Jack specific, is there is risk of complete loss of capital. You know, even with Elevate, there is risk of complete loss of capital. Like if you know, I don't know how to measure the probability of states coming in and saying payday loans are banned and Elevate, you're in this, you're, you know, you're umbrellaed here with these guys and see you later, you're out of this state. That's too hard for me to measure. So I really got to discount, you know, what I've, you know, I literally just need to slap that onto the risk section and, you know, don't underestimate it. And even doing that at $3 a share, I don't know what price I was buying at, maybe 350. I want to buy it at three. I want to buy it, you know, the lower it goes. I obviously want to try to grab some more of it, but, and then I just recently found a competitor that's trading at like 9x earnings or something like that, and Elevate's trading at 2.5x earnings. But anyway, it literally, the value changes so quickly based on the price that you're grabbing shares at and what your risk reward is, as long as you're relatively close. And that's why I don't really care to be too, you know, accurate in what I think the business valuation is. You know, I my ranges on business valuations are like, you know, very, very wide. You know, what is possible in my book?
Yeah, my best case sometimes is like $20 and my worst case is like $250 sometimes.
Yeah, but no, that's reality is like, okay, you know, have you ever in your life seen something just go not according to plan? You know, like everyone that was betting on the world ending on that specific date, whatever it was, and, you know, they did these really bold things and the world didn't end. Well, oh shit, you know. There was a wide range of possible outcomes there. And, you know, it would have been silly to go out and steal a bunch of TVs and, you know, sell your house or do something very drastic like that, betting on, you know, and this is what investing is, you know. I hate when people say investing is not a casino, like the stock market is not a casino. Like, what in the world are you talking about? Like, you literally are wagering. It's literally a game of wagers. And your wager is just an expression of, you know, what you think is going to happen in the future. And the people that are good at predicting the future, or, you know, you don't even have to really be predicting the future. It's just like, you know, finding things that, you know, where the probabilities are and the payouts are skewed. It's like those people are going to get incredibly wealthy. And, you know, once you start tasting the powers of compounding, you don't want to go back. You don't want to, you know, play any other way other than, I want to say, the most disciplined way possible. And like, I much rather, like I said, I have like three $12,000 bets probably right now, or I got, you know, bigger bets than that. But I much rather find one really good stock than, you know, and be able to, you know, throw $36,000 in it versus, you know, find three at 12 where, like, you know, there, the situations are different. If I found a beautiful setup, like an A++, yeah, I want my money in that. And then maybe a 12% or whatever. Like, diversification is not necessarily like, it's so overpreached. Like, I follow all these Instagram accounts and like, diversify, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, dude, do you want to just live a piker life, or do you want to actually have fun investing? Like, these people, I don't understand these people that are so into investing that they run pages and they do all this investing stuff. And they're like, yeah, let's get into some ETFs. Like, what the heck?
It's because they're just commentators. They're just media personalities, I think is what it is. They're not really investors. It's all just market commentary.
That is so lame. Like, you are so lame if you're out there like having like a page and you're like literally just like your portfolio is 85% ETFs and you're just like what are you doing? Like, get better. Stop hitting off a tee and come play the game. Like, come play coach pitch, come play kid pitch. You know, I like to think that like I'm playing at a little bit higher level than some people, but fact is you could go from hitting off the tee to MLB really quick if you have the right principles. Like, I love the fact that you're writing out your principles and like what you are thinking is incredibly important. And you know, everybody should do that. I share my stuff. Like, I like the journal. That journal process, that's what I use. This is me. My checklist, that's me. This is what I do. And this is, you know, I know it works because I put up mean numbers and I share this stuff because, you know, if you have the right teacher, you're going to, you know, you're going to be much better off in life. And if you're out here following like 99% of these clowns, dude, like, you're wasting time. You're not going to achieve your goals. It's like reading books, right? Like, I got a million books. I love to read, but a lot of the times I pick up a book and I go, okay, well, this is like the value of this book to me at this point in my life is very, very low. The value of it, you know, 5 years ago when I didn't know any of this material was a lot higher, but now it's like, this information is useless because I fully understand it. And, you know, that's why I, you know, when I pick up a book, for it to interest me about investing, it's got to be really, really good. And it's got to be talking about things that I haven't thought about yet. And, or like things that I think I know, but when I sit down and write out, you know, start to write about these ideas that I realize I don't know. And then I need to start studying that topic. And that, I think that's really important to learning. If you really want to be a good investor, it boils down to constantly learning. And you learn, in my opinion, you learn best by writing about it. And then as you are doing your writing, you're going to find shit that you're like, oh shit, I thought I knew how to explain this, but
yeah, that's what writing does to you.
I really don't. And then that's exactly where learning takes place. You go study that topic and then you come back and you continue writing and you're like, wow, you know, that you're making progress. If that's a very simple system that will make you smarter. And, you know, I'm all about these simple things that really help you in life. Like, I promise you, I promise you. And I'm going to change the way I do some things. And you have to continue to grow. Like, you can't just, you know, oh, this works and I'm never going to change a thing. Well, you should be getting better. You should always be fighting to get yourself better. So, like, my daily routine is really simple. You know, work out, read, write, due diligence slash I literally, like, part of my life is making sure that I research businesses. Have to post content on social media, and then I have to walk or train my dog, because that's a really important aspect of, you know, if I do these six things every single day, I will, you know, accomplish what I'm trying to do in life. And instead of, you know, putting check marks, like, if I read, I'm going to start putting, like, okay, I read 50 pages, or I read, you know, 60 pages, whatever.
I do that on my whiteboard. I do that on my whiteboard in my room. I have like a section of it portioned off, and it's like, work out, read 10 pages, or like, now I have like code 1 hour a week or something like that. So I can just slowly learn how to code. And then it's just like, if you do spend 1 hour of coding a week for the next 52 weeks, you're going to know how to code decent. You're going to get better at it. If you do it 1 hour a week, you're going to have you're not going to be an expert on 1 hour a week, but like, you're going to improve at it. You're going to be better than you were when you didn't do it at 1 hour a week.
Oh my God. It's like, it's compounding. That is compounding too. It's like, knowledge compounds better than anything else in life. And your experiences compound, and your relationships compound. Like, these are all really important things that get discounted. Like, back to my routine is like, there's some times where I, like, you know, I go through this and I'm like, dude, oh my gosh, like, I had a really poor week. I only accomplished like 70% of this stuff. Or there are other ways where it's like, that literally, the feedback loop on doing really, really, performing really, really well at a high level is like contagious to me, where I'm like, oh, dude, I kicked ass. Like, literally 100% on 7 days a row. I literally did not miss a checkbox. Like, next thing you know, I'm like, oh, okay, I got a 7 day streak. I got an 8 day streak. I got a 9 day streak, 10, 12, you know, eight, you know, next thing you know, it's like, you know, you're on day, like, let's say you're on day 16, 17, and you're like, oh, dude, I cannot, the one thing I cannot do today is let this streak end. This is like, you know, a good streak. I had to keep it going. And then, like, next thing you know, bam, you kick ass for a month or, you know, a month and a half. And then, don't get me wrong, it's human nature to run into burnout sometimes. And like, it's like inevitable, it happens. And sometimes you hit walls and it's like, gosh, like, I wish I had a magic pill. I don't need a magic pill for anything else other than to, like, when I hit a wall, if I could just have a pill that gets me right out of the wall, like, yeah, out of that burnout immediately. Oh my God. I would be, you know,
sometimes you're the best when you come back after a break. Taking a break is hard because you feel guilty and things like that. But, and you just feel like you're kind of wasting your time. You're not making any progress. You're stuck. But sometimes coming back after a break is the best time, like that, for athletes, writers, just, and I mean, we're like an athlete of some sort in
most definitely
in investing, obviously. But like, it was like 2 months ago or so that I just had to, like, I couldn't listen to podcasts anymore. I wasn't reading, like, my mind just needed a break completely. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take 2 weeks off. I'm not even going to think about investing. I hated investing during this 2 week time period. I was like, I need to get away from this at all. But then when I came back, my mind was so much clearer. I was thinking about problems in different ways that I didn't previously think about them. Yeah. It was really useful.
I literally love that. Like, it's like, you really shouldn't feel guilty at all. Like, I don't know why I have a really tough time, because I'm always like, I have all of these ideas. And when I sometimes, like last night, when I know that I'm starting to touch burnout, when I literally can't sleep, like last night, I'm literally sitting in bed and I could not sleep. I literally had to come back to my computer. I literally like just had to work, like, and it sucked because I woke up early. I literally worked all day, and then I can't sleep, and I get back to work because there's so much on my mind. And, you know, when I start getting like that, it's just, you know, it's like almost like an indicator that burnout is on the horizon and I'm going to start feeling like shit because I'm not sleeping, I'm overworking, and next thing you know, my performance is going to start to go down and then I'm going to, you know, shut it all off, you know, entirely. It's just good. I'm driving across the U.S. Probably leaving here on the 18th or 19th. So I'm going to there's literally no choice. I literally have to stop working. And that's why I can't sleep, is because I'm like, oh my God, I got to get all this stuff done. I got to like schedule posts because I don't want, you know, it's like Instagram rewards you for posting every day. So missing days hurts.
Yeah.
We're on Amazon. I'm like, okay, you know, like how am I going to be shipping these? So I got like my office set up for, you know, my mom's going to come over. She's going to, you know, print out the labels and put them in the mail center. And, you know, it's like all these little things are like, everything has to get taken care of. You know, there's like, my attention is spread so across so many things right now. It's like, you got to keep up with everything. It's a lot of work. It's fun. Don't get me wrong. Like I literally love trying to, you know, I'm like, okay. And I'm like, the one thing too is like, okay, I want to build ads and, you know, I want these ads to be good. The copyright has to be right. I'm learning about SEO. So one of the things that's really important which I haven't told you, but I've been tracking, you know, where do our articles fall on Google search? Well, I wrote an article on how to make money in Robinhood, right? Like, you know, how I tripled my Robinhood portfolio, yada, yada. That article was like nowhere to be found on Google. And it's slowly starting to rank. Like it's gone from like 50 to like 17 to 10 now. And hopefully if that's the number one article on Google search, well, that's a really, really huge move. And that'll drive a lot more traffic to the site and that'll drive a lot more sales to the site. And it was actually one of the people that purchased the journal, emailed me the review of the journal. He gave it a 5-star. So if you guys like the journal or you guys are interested in the journal, just to see what we have cooking, you should get the journal, check it out for yourself. And he's like, this is an awesome product. And then I noticed at the bottom, it was like his company was Freshly Squeezed. And I love that name. I think that's a great name. And I messaged her back like, hey, look, I see you do SEO. And then he wrote me an absolutely, you know, amazing email back, you know, saying, hey, I took a look at your website. This is what I saw. This is what you should do. And now I'm like, dude, anybody that puts that much time and effort and value into an email, like you want to talk about a good business move? You do something like that and you provide someone a lot of value. I go, dude, I'm calling you. I literally already scheduled a meeting with him on Monday. And like, that's the type of service that someone's going to pay for. Like I get people on Instagram and the emails all the time. Hey, I'm so-and-so. I can, you know, do your SEO for you. And I'm just like, no, buddy, like you're spam. But something like that is like completely different because you gave me all the value first. It's like, why do people follow Audrey on Instagram? Because we give the value, right? We don't ask for ask for your money first. We say, okay, look, you know, here's some value, take a taste, then come visit us. Or same on YouTube. It's like I got to go and do all these YouTube videos. You know, the day trading videos literally get so many views. And it's like, these day traders are so dumb. Like, don't get me wrong.
I was watching a lot. I was watching someone's YouTube live yesterday with 47,000 viewers. And
live?
Yeah, YouTube. It was on YouTube.
Why do I gotta be a short seller?
Well, it was just the big thing on YouTube is a flashy thumbnail. Flashy thumbnail to get people to click. And it was like AMC Diamond Hands, et cetera, et cetera. Or what would you say? Yada yada bullshit.
Upgrade the thumbnail game. Yeah, I gotta get the ones where like you got the background that looks good and then you got the person's face where they're like,
yeah,
like whatever, like very
some sort of high energy thing. Yeah, all right.
I gotta go on TikTok. Speaking about like being animated and enthusiastic, Before we wrap things up, because, and this is a real thing in business, it's like awareness is so important. Like, the journal gets 5-star reviews. It's a 5-star product. And, you know, that's great. But if people don't know about it, you're not unlocking the value potential. Yeah. So it is really important, you know, to find ways to gain awareness. And like, I did, you know, I studied communications and I learned this stuff in college, and guerrilla marketing is important and yada, yada. But real quick, I did this when I was in college. There was the Jacksonville Jaguars had open tryouts for the public because they were so bad. They could not win a game. So they opened tryouts to the public. I heard about this and like, okay, I was a Division I athlete, but I know, like, you go out to the bars and you see like some of these guys from the Jaguars out at the bars and you're like, holy Toledo. Like, I did not know that they made humans that large. Like, and like that looked like that. But I started making these videos. There was a complete joke, but I would put on this helmet. I painted the helmet just like a Jaguars thing. I laminated the stickers and stuff like that. It looked really good. I got this awesome gold visor. Like, I did it all. It was like $25 on Craigslist. And I like literally got everything done. And I would make these really bizarre videos of me acting like I'm like training for these open tryouts and stuff like that. And I would get very animated and extremely enthusiastic. Like, I'm acting, but you know, people on YouTube, they're idiots. They're like, holy, you know, you're crazy, dude. Like, take a chill pill and like stuff like this. Like, you're going to die. If you're going to have a heart attack, if you keep like caring this much about the Jaguars and all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm not even a Jaguars fan, but I just, you know,
it was funny.
I'm trolling or whatever. And I ended up getting a lot of, I got tons of publicity. Like, this is like 2015, 16, maybe. No, 2000, maybe 14. I actually got picked up and Barstool Sports put my video on their website.
Oh my God.
And we talk about a death spell. Barstool posted about me. The comments were so painful to read that I literally quit. They were ruthless. They were like, this kid should kill himself. You know, like,
yeah, that's the comment.
Oh my gosh. And I literally was like, I honestly feel bad because I was like, what if this was like a real person, man? Like, these guys on the internet are mean. They are vicious. So that's literally Barstool was the death of Drew Jones and the Jaguar character that I made. But I'm thinking about trying one. I'm going to make a TikTok character. I'm going to call him Marley Chunger. And like, I think Charlie Munger is like the most wise person in the world. And I just, I'm going to be like the complete opposite and just like YOLO trades and shit. Just be an absolute
idiot. You just need to Photoshop Robin Hood gains is all you need to do.
I literally just got to see if I can get like something on TikTok, because the first video I ever posted on TikTok, 100,000 views, 5,000 followers. And like, since, I don't know what to post and it's tough. So I want to try to figure TikTok out, because everyone wants to be on TikTok, but I guess that's the wrap. Learn about risk to reward all the way to TikTok.
No, there were some great risk reward talk at the beginning of the episode, I think, and midway through. I gave the fair warning when we started that we tend to get off topic, so it shouldn't be a surprise.
There will be plenty of risk to reward talk.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll catch you in the next one, and happy trading.
Happy trading.